From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with writer and podcaster Matt Frad, author of The Porn Myth, exposing the reality behind the fantasy of pornography. Due to the subject matter of this particular broadcast, listener discretion is advised. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Matt Frad in their conversation.
I think pornography is intrinsically evil, right? So even if it wasn't addictive, even if it didn't cause erectile dysfunction, even if it didn't cause marital breakdown, I think it's wrong in and of itself because of what it is, because you shouldn't treat people merely as means to an end, especially not a selfish end. And so, but yes, I think stooping to conquer is a good idea. And so beginning with the science, you know, this doesn't need to be a moral issue right away. I've had friends of mine who are atheists who say they quit porn because just for that reason, they couldn't have sex with their girlfriend. But then all of a sudden, they began to realize, wow, I'm beginning to feel all sorts of emotions that I haven't allowed myself to feel because I kept turning to porn. Like, wow, maybe we shouldn't be treating people like consumable goods. And all of a sudden, they bit by bit began to wake up to the immorality of it. So that's, again, what the book's about. I'm okay stooping to conquer.
What about the myth, Matt, that porn empowers women? That's a fairly pervasive myth, I would say.
Yeah, this is a myth that it's nice to believe, because if I'm the sort of person who likes to you know, stimulate myself to pictures of people being abused on a screen for payment, it's very helpful if I can also tell myself that not only am I a gentleman, but that I'm contributing to the flourishing of women all around the world or something. But that's just absolute nonsense. There's nothing liberating about choosing to be a sex object. I would put it this way. Being cool about being degraded doesn't make being degraded any more cool. And so someone can tell you that they find this liberating, but what else would they say? This is their means of income at the moment. But speak to that woman 5 years after she's got out of the industry, and I promise you it's a different story. So I have a podcast called Love People Use Things, and just the other week I interviewed a porn star for an hour about what it was like and why she ended up getting out. And she agreed with me, because I've worked alongside of several people who've been in the porn industry. She's like, I can't tell you one woman who didn't suffer some serious form of neglect or abuse as a child. That's just the boring narrative that they'll all tell you. This idea that you have a healthy life and that you end up getting into it, I think it's just a fiction that we have to tell ourselves. And, you know, I'm a fan of some of the things Friedrich Nietzsche said. He had this notion of resentiment. And the idea with that, he says, is when you feel yourself impotent to attain a particular good, you demonize the good. You turn the virtue into a vice and the vice into a virtue. So if I cannot control myself, well, I have two options. I either say I'm weak, or I look to people like Matt Frad and say, you're a frigid, uptight, anti-sex prude. And it's a lot easier to do that because I don't have to change. I have to demonize chastity, right? Demonize people who are opposed to pornography. And that's, I think, what we're seeing when you hear people say porn's liberating to women. I mean, what woman are you talking about? The one in the industry? The wives, ask them if they feel empowered by their husband's porn use. Your daughters, do they feel empowered at having to live up now to these apparent standards that they feel they have to live up to? Which woman in particular do you feel is being empowered by this? I think it's just nonsense.
So this is a pervasive myth, because if you have Dear Abby saying that pornography can actually be okay, it can actually help you with sexual intimacy, she's tacitly endorsing something that is demeaning to women in general.
Right. Demeaning to women, demeaning to men. Because I think at the heart of every man is the desire to be a protector, and porn turns him into a predator. Maybe we could say at the bottom of the desire every woman is a desire to be treasured, but porn turns her into a target. And so neither of us get what we want. It promises us, like most sin does, something good, you know. you think, well, I'll go to porn and I'll be excited, but we become bored. Or you go in order to become free to do whatever you want and you become enslaved. Or you go for, you know, for adult entertainment, you become increasingly juvenile. I think ask anybody who's been struggling with this for any length of time, you know, have you ever met an addict who you found interesting? I mean, any interesting person you've ever met, someone you're like, wow, this person seems to have like a broad and deep interior life. That's not a person who's hooked on drugs, you know. And again, I mean, I've got about 40 pages in the back of the Porn Myth, I think, that tries to document these studies to show that this isn't just my thought, that this is what the sciences are finding.
I want to talk about the M word, masturbating. You've mentioned it a couple of times during the podcast. You're actually making the case in a very compelling fashion that masturbating is unhealthy.
Right. Yeah. And for a number of reasons. Again, I think it's important that we distinguish the consequences from the act. So I think the act of pornography is intrinsically disordered, whether or not certain negative physical effects take place afterwards, like addiction or erectile dysfunction, right? And I think the same thing's true with masturbation. I think masturbation's a disordered act. I think whenever you thwart the primary end of a natural action, then you've perverted the act. That's why we would say that bulimia is disordered. Whether or not, you know, negative results occur, you would say that no. I mean, the reason you eat is for nutrition. So if you eat in order to get the pleasure of food and then throw up in order to not get the primary purpose of food, that namely nutrition, this is disordered. And I think sex, I think, clearly has at least two ends. You would say, well, it's for the good of those coming together. And there's an openness to life that ought to be there. And I think in masturbation, you get neither. Instead, you have to retreat into a sort of fantasy world where you, as Lewis put it, you keep a harem of imaginary brides that never call for sacrifice, and you're always the perfect lover, always adored, and you begin to think that an orgasm is something that you deserve, you know, and you become start to think of ejaculation like urination. It's just what you have to do. But this isn't good at all. And so while masturbation is not as bad as pornography and masturbation, that doesn't make masturbation good. It would be like saying smoking one pack of cigarettes a day is less bad than smoking 10, but that doesn't make one packet healthy.
It's interesting that you brought up marriage in a definitional sense that is very, very different from how marriage is defined today. And Catholics still have this sense with respect to a marriage definition where there's an openness to children. But that openness to children phrase or part of the definition is quite frankly missing in most Christian vernacular.
Well, we spoke earlier, didn't we, about if the majority of Christendom has believed one thing and now because of cultural influences we say, well, that's wrong. That should cause us pause. And I know that the Orthodox Church, depending on who you ask, might be a little, well, yes or no on this question, but up until 1930, there wasn't a Protestant denomination, for example, that said contraception was okay. But after around 1930, the Anglican Church allowed it in particular uses. And so, again, I think the Catholic Church is consistent here. If one of the primary ends of the sexual act is an openness to life, then you shouldn't thwart that end. And if you do, and you begin to tell yourself that it's okay to use condoms and this sort of thing, and I know I'm alienating the majority of your audience here, so I apologize, but this is just me speaking off the cuff and speaking as real as I can, then all of a sudden it becomes a little more easier to justify things like masturbation, right? Because you've taken the procreative element out of the act altogether. But anyway, in the book, I don't appeal to religious dogma or to the, you know, church fathers or anything like that. Feel free to push back there, Hank. I'm not trying to be argumentative, but I have an open discussion.
Well, I'll push back when it's appropriate, but I don't think it's appropriate to push back on that. I don't disagree with what you're saying. And I was really struck in the book by this one phrase with respect to the makeup of semen being
right.
Different. I mean, that
fascinating,
I had, that was the first time I had ever encountered that idea.
I was too. When I found that, I thought, this is ridiculous. This can't be true. The more I looked into it, it was true. So I hope you're going to use a little disclaimer at the start of this episode. I hope there's no children listening. But basically, the makeup of the ejaculate is different when it's produced by masturbation than when it's produced through vaginal intercourse, which is really weird and fascinating. I don't know what else to say on that, but this is a different act. I think it sends a man or a woman back into themselves. You think, and this is Lewis again, one of the primary purposes of life is to come out of that little shell we're all born into and become a self-gift, right? This is my body given up for you, is what the sexual act says. When we consume pornography or when we masturbate to fantasy, we say, this is your body taken by me. And so instead of loving, we become users. So we sort of flip that call to self-donating love on its head. And so for that reason, I don't think anyone, any Christian, should say that masturbation is okay. I don't think it is at all.
What's really cool about this discussion from my perspective is that I've been saying for years that God sets parameters around our lives so that our joy might be complete. We don't always understand why, but now you get these little insights like, wow, even the makeup of semen is different. Who would have known?
Right.
But if you live within the parameters that God sets forth for you to live within, you're just going to be more content and happy. And so if there is an objective truth, if there's an objective reality, if there is such a thing as natural law, we ought not to be cutting off the very branch we're sitting on.
Right. And again, I want to make it clear in that chapter, I'm not appealing to religion. I'm not even really appealing to natural law in that section. It was more this idea that I looked at a bunch of the different studies because people like to isolate studies and say, well, look, this proves that this reduces your risk of this or something. Well, the argument is essentially that ejaculation is good for you. Okay, that's not necessarily news. You would think that the act by which the human species is propagated would have positive consequences. That's hardly revelatory, but that doesn't mean that I ought to seek that end through any means possible. You know, if I said, well, if I get together with my mistress before coming home to my wife, it puts me in the mood and I'm able to make love to my wife in a much more intense way that satisfies her. Well, that's great, but that doesn't mean you should be hanging out with your mistress at all. So in fact, when you look at the studies, and I showed this in the chapter, it shows that frequent masturbation leads to more things like anxiety, social awkwardness, prostate abnormalities, continuance in erectile dysfunction if one has that already, and those sorts of things. Anyway, so again, I want to stoop to conquer, right? Like if there's an atheist who disagrees with me on that, I'm not going to spend my time focusing on that. I want to begin at least with pornography and see if I can get him on board there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And another myth in this respect has to do with rape and sexual violence. And whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Buddhist, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Christian, whatever you are, the one thing that we ought to be able to agree on is that rape is bad.
Yes. Yes, I think that's fair to say that every person who isn't a garbage dump of a human being agrees with that statement. And so the question then is, does porn lead to sexual aggression or sexual violence? Well, first of all, let's do away with the straw man. No one on my side is saying that everyone who looks at porn will rape or sexually harm another person. No one's saying that. But what we are saying is if someone does sexually violate another human person, there is a strong, there's real good reasons to think that that person's addicted to porn, right? Because when somebody hurts somebody in a sexual way, one thing at least is true, right? The perpetrator doesn't view this person so much as a good to be cherished, but as a thing to be had and used for my sexual gratification. And I can't think of a better delivery method for that mentality than pornography. And if you're still not sure, let me ask you this question. If you had a next door neighbor who enjoyed consuming child pornography, would you be more or less comfortable with them babysitting your kids? Obviously, the answer is less comfortable. And if I were to say, well, why? He has an outlet. You wouldn't find that consoling. And so, in fact, there's actually really good reasons, despite some of the opponents' protestations, that that consuming pornography does lead to sexual aggression and violence. I mean, when you consider that the vast majority of pornography involves name-calling, you know, physical aggression like slapping and choking and hitting, there was a study that was done in 2007 that showed this, then that's how you grow up learning about sex. And so the idea that that would have no effect on your sexual behavior, is just ridiculous. That's like saying that advertising doesn't work, you know, because we can tell the difference between fantasy and reality. Well, maybe we can't.
Talk about what actually happens to people who are involved in the porn industry, both the brutality against women as well as what happens to the men. The men can injure themselves in a pretty significant way. I don't know how graphic you want to get about this, but the women are definitely violated to an extent of physical harm that's repulsive, exactly.
Yeah, it's difficult to get in this, and I don't want to get into it with any detail because I'd hate to sort of scandalize anybody. In the book, they enabled me to go to some degree, but needless to say, I mean, there's tearing that takes place. One lady talked about the muscle of a particular organ coming out on set. It's just body it's torture plus orgasm is what a lot of pornography is today.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with author Matt Fradd. An increasingly accepted belief in today's popular culture says that pornography is a harmless or even beneficial pastime. Author Matt Fradd draws on the experience of porn performers and users and the expertise of neurologists, sociologists, and psychologists to demonstrate that pornography is destructive to individuals and society. To receive your copy of The Porn Myth, Exposing the Reality Behind the Fantasy of Pornography as Our Appreciation for Your Financial Partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more on The Bible Answer Man. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call
888-7000-CRI, and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Welcome back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. On today's edition, we're presenting an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Did you know that pornography is neurologically addictive? Are you able to separate the myths from the facts about pornography? Matt Frad offers real help to the parents and spouses of porn users in his book, The Porn Myth, exposing the reality behind the fantasy of pornography. To receive your copy of The Porn Myth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Matt Frad, in their conversation.
It's torture plus orgasm is what a lot of pornography is today.
The face of it, how can anybody think that that is stimulating?
Well, I don't think you begin there, right? It is stimulating, but you don't begin there. Like, nobody wakes up at the age of 30 having never watched porn and then thought, I want to watch a gangbang where a girl gets choked and spat on. That's what I'm in the mood for. Nobody wakes up at 30 and says that unless they have become desensitized and feel the need to watch more deviant porn. What that does is that boosts, you know, epinephrine, which boosts dopamine. It's the reason risky sex, right, might feel more and is more sexually pleasurable because there's this risk factor involved which heightens our senses and, again, gives us more pleasure. And so I think it goes from one stage to the next where all of a sudden you think to yourself, God, what am I watching? How did I ever get to this? A year ago, this would have made me sick. Today, it's the only thing that can get me off. And for many people, that's the wake-up call that says to them, I need help, and I need help now.
I want to talk about some strategies. You're a sort of a lightweight. You have 4 kids. I have 12.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations. How are you not Catholic? I'm just joking.
Or Mormon, right? Everybody asks me, are you a Catholic or are you a Mormon? Right?
The way you can tell, though, is if they're really attractive, they're Mormon.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if they look exhausted for some reason and their clothes don't match, they're Catholic.
Yeah, exactly. So strategies. You have 4 kids. You got to do something about your kids. You care about your kids. I care about my kids. But you mentioned something earlier, which I think all of us ought to hear some alarm bells. Schools are giving kids tablets. Those kids can do what they want with those tablets. We're not monitoring them all the time. What are they going to do? I mean, it's going to devolve to the lowest common denominator. Oftentimes does. What do you do about that? What are strategies that...
Right. When I was 8 and 9, my friends figured out really quickly how to write boobies on the calculator when you turn it upside down. Right? Hmm. That's what we did. You know, 8, 0, 0, 8, you know, 1, 3, 4, you know, if that's what we were doing, like if the first thing you did in high school or when you were a kid, perhaps before the internet, is you got a dictionary, the first thing you did was look up sex, right? There's like a natural good curiosity that we all have. But when you give your kids an iPad or an iPhone, what you're giving them potentially is a portable X-rated movie theater. That's what you just gave them. So what do you do? Well, let me just give the short answer real quick. And the short answer is, number one, get my book. Number two, listen to my podcast, Love People Use Things, because I have tons of, you know, episodes and stuff on this where I get into this great detail. The first thing is we have to educate our kids, and I think I've spoken about that a little bit. The next thing is you absolutely have to lock all of your technology down. So this should be something parents, this should be their mantra. If I'm not willing to monitor it, I will not provide it.
But the schools provide it. I mean, that's what,
right.
And the schools are providing the tablets.
And this is why I don't send my kids to I send my kids to a 2-day-a-week classical hybrid school where technology isn't available. So homeschool's an option. Like if you're sending your kids to a public school, maybe that's not a good idea. Like maybe it's, you know, that might be offensive to you, but like maybe I'm wrong, but maybe I'm right. And you need to wrestle with that a little bit. I think we've got to be very serious about the purity of our children. I'm not saying it's impossible, But I tell you, if I was sending my kids to a school that used technology, I'd be next to the principal typing in all sorts of pornographic terms to see just how good their filter is. So parents need to be just, you know, mothers are fantastic at this, you know, like be merciless, like do not let good enough be okay. They need to be having things like covenant eyes on their devices, which is a much better, say, filter than others that might just have a blacklist of URLs. And so that would be one way to do it. And then educating parents about the reality of the harms that pornography causes to wake them up. This isn't a rite of passage that's harmless. This isn't just something that all kids do. This is something that could destroy your child right now and in eternity. And so stooping to conquer, again, you don't have to talk about eternity now, but you can talk about the statistics that I lay out in my book just to educate them. There's a great book. It's a beautifully illustrated book for parents to read to their kids. It's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn-Proofing Today's Young Kids. So, I would tell everyone to go get a copy of that on Amazon. That might be the first step. And then to realize that your kids are only as safe as the houses that they play at. So I don't let my kids play at houses where there is unbridled internet access. Why would I do that if I love my kid? I do love my kid, and therefore I don't let them do that. Now, I have lots of friends who agree with me, and so my friends have a very rich social life. It's not like I'm keeping them in a cave or something. They have a lot of fun, you know. They read, they fish, they memorize poetry, they, you know, they wrestle, all those sorts of things. But as someone who's responsible for my kids, I know they're going to see pornography eventually. But there's good studies that have shown that the earlier your kid is exposed to porn, the more likely it is to have a long-lasting detrimental effect in their lives. And so, you know, we talk about not sheltering our kids, and I think there's truth to that, you know. But if your kid is in a thunderstorm, yeah, well, you better shelter your kid. And it seems to me that the environment in which we are is even worse than that. It's more like a hurricane or a tsunami or something's taking place. And you need to shelter your kids from that as best as you're able. And not in a defensive sort of way. I mean, we know from Scripture where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more, and that in the world we'll have trouble, and we should be of good cheer because he has overcome the world. We should not just be defensive. We should be offensive as well and joyful and realize that our kids are going to be wounded. But that's why we have a divine physician. Like, it would be an awful thing to have to deprive your children of the gift of healing. And so, yeah, like our children are going to receive different things that they're going to have to heal from. But healing's a beautiful thing, and we can trust in our Lord. And at the end of most nights, you know, I go to our blessed Lord and I'm like, Lord, make up for the ways that I fell short today, because I fall short a great deal, you know?
You know, Matt, in many ways, what you just said, particularly at the beginning of your latest rant, I mean, you sounded radical.
I mean, good. I hope that's the point.
Yeah, I mean, to the common, I mean, get next to your principal and make sure, well, these times really call for radical action. I mean, this is a very toxic culture, and there has to be a radical way of dealing with it, because if you don't, your kids are going to, you know, they're going to sow to the wind and reap the whirlwind.
Yes, they'll destroy their lives and be damned for all eternity in hell. That's probably that's what'll happen if you allow them to just imbibe the culture. And if the grace doesn't intervene, I'm not saying that we're responsible for our children's salvation, but when they're young, we are those who we are meant to guard them and shelter them and protect them and guide them. And if we fail at that job, then it would be better if a millstone was tied around our neck and we were thrown into the sea. Now that sounds radical too. But he walked out of the grave, so I'm going to go with that, you know.
Well, I'm glad you're...
Now, it's funny because this is a book that's non-religious, and all I've done is preach.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure that out. I was just thinking about that. I was thinking, okay, it's a book that's non-religious, so you help people with pornography, but you got to take them the next step.
Yeah, that's right. And I think just like
you're
we
saving
can,
them from something, what are you saving them to, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We need freedom from and freedom for, salvation from, salvation for. And just like we should be and writing books, say that here's the scientific and logical argument against abortion. right? We should write them. They shouldn't all be cloaked in religious terminology. Well, the same thing can be done with pornography. So if you get my book, we don't mention sin. You know, there's no mention of salvation or Christ. All those things are vitally important. I wrote this because so many parents and people said to me, I'd love to give a book to somebody, you know, but all of it's religious. So the other thing I want to point out before we wrap up is I don't make a cent from this book. 100% of the royalties go to help sexually traffic women. There's a group in San Diego called Children of the Immaculate Heart. So I'm not plugging this just so I can make more money. Not that there's anything wrong with that, okay? But I'm plugging it because I think it's a good book that will help you, and you can, you know, people could get it on Audible if they want to listen to it, but they won't get all the footnotes, whereas if they got the book. I do hope people get that, or if not that, you know, they go to websites like fightthenewdrug.com or yourbrainonporn.com just to learn more about it and to begin having these conversations. Because whether they're going to be awkward or not, the conversations have to be had.
You've got a pretty broad swath of interest, I would imagine, just talking to you. Pornography is foundational. It's a seismic issue. What turns you on? I'm trying to use that word in a different sense, but what turns you on in terms of your life goals? I mean, if you were on your deathbed, what would you have liked to accomplish?
To lead people to Jesus Christ and to be a good husband and a good father. That's it, man. On my deathbed, that's all I want to have said I've done. And like most of our listeners, or almost all of them, I see myself fail at that every day. And when I do, if I look to others, I can say, well, I'm better than them. And grow in pride. If I look to myself, I might become despondent and despair. And that's why I need to keep looking to Jesus, because in him, I sort of see this God who apparently loved me enough to do that for me, even though I don't fully understand why he would bother. And so by his grace, I'm motivated to continue one step at a time. I mean, that's the goal in all of this. So I don't want to give anyone any false impressions. You know, I struggle with, you know, yelling at my kids and, you know, being insensitive to my wife and, you know, being arrogant and snarky on social media. I mean, I'm like everyone else. So I don't want to give anyone the wrong impression if I've come down hard on any position or anyone in particular. And I struggle with lust, and there's times that I'm tempted to look at porn. And, you know, I'm in the battlefield like everybody else. I don't want to give in. And it's worth swinging and to continue swinging. And if we fall, we get back up. And,
You know, that's an interesting comment in and of itself, and it reminds me, I mentioned Joe Dallas earlier. He was in the gay lifestyle for a long time. He just doesn't put himself in the circumstance now because though he's happily married, he still knows he had those proclivities. And if you've
right.
had the kind of background that you alluded to earlier on, from 8 years old, I think it was, with pornography, you still have to fight that temptation and put up guards for yourself just as you're putting up guards for your children.
That's right. And I want to give people hope because there was a time in my life where I walked around daily trying to resist pornography. It's not like that anymore. Like I can go several months without feeling any inclination to be tempted to this stuff. But then occasionally I'll feel something bubble up inside me. Like this happened, I told my wife about this. This happened several weeks ago. You know, I felt that the beginnings of that temptation, right? That question, I could do that. And I came back to my hotel room after a hard night of work and I had a whiskey in my hand. And I knew myself, I thought, you know what? I'm going to tip this bloody $10 drink down the drain and do something because I know myself and I'm feeling something going on. And so I did. I tipped that whiskey down the drain and I did something else. And so we have to be, it's like if you received maybe you broke your arm or broke some particular part of your body in a sport when you were young. Well, you might feel like it's fine now, but you've got to be aware of it if you're engaging in an activity that needs to use that in any, you know, prominent way, because you know there's a weakness there. And so self-knowledge is a good thing.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with author and podcaster Matt Fradd in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and as thanks for your gift, receive a copy of Matt Fradd's book, The Porn Myth, exposing the reality behind the fantasy of pornography. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Pornography is a pervasive problem in our culture that affects all of us. In his book, The Porn Myth, Matt Frad provides insightful, non-religious arguments, supported by the latest scientific research to discredit the fanciful claims used to defend and promote pornography. To receive your copy of The Porn Myth, Exposing the Reality Behind the Fantasy of Pornography as Our Appreciation for Your Financial Partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Matt Frad.
I want you to expand on this, the relational aspect. You just mentioned your wife. If you're involved with pornography, if you're involved with other kinds of outlets sexually, you're damaging your wife. You're betraying your wife. Expand on that.
Right. Yeah. So how to put it? I mean, when I married my wife, I said on the altar, I want our love to be free, total, faithful, and fruitful. And then on our wedding night, I said that same thing, but with my body. Right, my body said what it said at the altar. I give myself to you freely, totally, faithfully, and fruitfully. And if I use pornography, then very soon my making love to her will be less and less of a free act. It'll be more and more dominated by passion and selfishness. Now, will it be a total act? Well, it might be, except I also might be thinking of something other than my wife. Will it be faithful? It's the opposite of faithful. I'm being faithless with my mind and with my eyes. Will it be fruitful? Well, it might be fruitful, but I also might, suppose, that's too much of a distraction. Let me just say this. I mean, I think the more I would engage in pornography, the more I would want to engage in a way with my bride that was not at all open to life. So you begin to sort of lie with your body. Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise and that other girl, Cameron Diaz, she says to him, "Your body made a promise to me, whether you did or not," talking about them making love the night before, fornicating. And I think that when we make love, our body says something. There's a language to our body. And when we consume pornography, we're lying with our body. And it would certainly be an act of infidelity for me to consume pornography.
And it completely robs you of intimacy.
Right. And just the beauty and the joy I have with my wife. You know, I don't say this. I really mean this. My wife is my best friend. We love each other. She's super funny. She's powerful. She's humble. We joke around together. You know, we tickle, we wrestle, and in non-sexual ways. I just like her. I think she's lovely. And I think that if I was still immersed in pornography, I would have never come to experience the delight of what it meant to have a beautiful marriage. So, I want to be a saint because it's the saints who are fully alive. If you want a boring, irritable life, then be a sinner. But I don't want that. I want a full and beautiful life here and now, and I know I can have that with God's grace, and I'm seeing it to different degrees. It might be more appropriate to say to my wife, "I'm learning to love you," rather than "I love you," because obviously selfishness creeps in and it's very ugly. But I want to love her. I want to be like Christ on the cross to my bride, laying down my life for her. And I fail at it, but I don't want to start justifying the failures and even celebrating them. I want to despise them and repent of them and strive to be a true man of God, you know?
Based on the statistics, I mean, there are a lot of people right now listening in who are struggling with pornography to one degree or another. What advice do you have?
Yeah, I think I'd look at them. Let's suppose they're a man for now, and I would say, "Brother, do you want to be free of this?" "Yes." "What are you doing to be free of this?" And your answer better be bloody manly. Because if you say something pathetic to me, like, "Well, I just try not to look at it," I'd want to slap you. If you want to be free of this, then you ought to be investing a lot of your energy in being free of this. This means good counseling. This means good accountability and filtering software. This means praying regularly. And if you're not doing those things, you might want to stop saying you want to be free. Because saying you want to be free and then doing nothing practical about it is like saying, "I want to run a marathon, but I don't really want to exercise or buy sneakers or learn to eat properly." Just admit that you don't want to run a marathon, you know. But if you do want to be free, there's some very practical things that you ought to be doing. I think one is to get my book. The other might be to get covenantized and find an accountability partner. These are sort of the non-essentials. Educate yourself about what it's robbing from you. Get an accountability partner. Be real with somebody. If this is something you've struggled with for a long time, go see a counselor. Find a certified sex addiction therapist. Right? You can find one of them at my website, lovepeopleusethings.fm. FM like AM and FM. You could plug in your postal code. It'll find people in your area. Go to a 12-step group. Go to sa.org. You can find a phone meeting or a meeting in person in your area and get serious about recovery. So suppose you're struggling and you haven't told your significant other, presuming you're married. I think it's probably a good idea that you do, but imagine how much more healthy and beautiful and optimistic it would be instead of just complaining about how weak and hard it is. If you said, "I love you, and here are the 10 things I'm doing because I love you. I've started seeing a therapist. I've got covenant eyes. I've got an accountability partner." Like, we just got to get serious because this thing's a cancer and it needs surgery immediately or else it'll take over and kill you. You know, it's Do you remember that movie? Was it called 42 Hours? What was that movie where that bloke got his arm stuck in a between a him and a boulder, and he was dying. He was in Utah. Well, he got his rusty pocket knife and he cut through his arm, bones, sinews, everything, because it was either that, and that's unthinkable to all of us, right? But it was that or die alone, and die then and there or very soon. Something similar is being required of us. Something drastic and radical needs to take place, or else it's going to kill you.
And you've already touched this, but I want you to reemphasize it. It's just so critical. You're a parent. I mean, I'm a parent. I've got 12 kids, as I said. I still have a 14-year-old. Goes to a Christian school. But nonetheless, he has a tablet. If you're a mother, if you're a father, once again, underscore the radical measures that you have to take if you really care about the well-being of your children.
So I think it's important to give our children an internal filter for an unfiltered world. So prior to the age of 12, I'd get both filtering and accountability software. Again, Carbonatize is the best. If you use my name as a promo code, FRAD, you get a month free. That might be a way to try it out, but you'll love it. And again, I'm not promoting them because I work for them or anything like that. They just are the best thing out there. But once your child's after 12, you might say, okay, I'm going to remove the filter and just use accountability software. That way, if you do go to any websites you shouldn't, I'll get an email telling me where you went, for how long, what you typed into Google. And I do this not to shame you or to make you feel awkward, but because I love you and I want to be there for you. And so I think, again, we live in an unfiltered world, so we can't just filter and censor everything. We've got to give our children an internal filter and be able to have open communication with them. I know so many parents who say to me that their teens come to them when they've fallen. You know, can I go to confession, mum? Or, you know, can we pray together? And I think that's a beautiful thing. And that the parent should look upon his child or her child the way our blessed Lord looks upon us when we turn to him in repentance, with tenderness and love and joy that he's turned to us, not scolding us, not telling us, I can't believe you did it, you know, not saying, well, my mercy's running out here. But with tremendous love, we got to show that to our kids and not overreact when they've fallen. Apologize to them. If your kids are young and they've fallen to pornography, don't get angry. Apologize, because this was your fault. This wasn't their fault. This is a sexualized culture into which you gave them, you know, you brought them up and then you've given them tablets and things. This is your fault. So you should apologize to them and say, well, we're going to do better. Mom and dad are going to get covenant eyes and we'll all be accountable, because there's no secrets in this family. There's no secrets. So you got to begin. However awkward the conversation will be, better than not having it. So if your kid's older and you've never had this discussion with them, you might say, I heard this interesting podcast with Matt and Hank, and I just want to say to you, if this is something you're struggling with now or ever have, you can always come to me and I would always help you, and I would have a lot of respect for you if you did come to me. Mm. Like you don't be afraid. I wouldn't lose respect for you. I'd be very proud of you. That you had such courage and maturity. And they might say, shut up, mom, I'm not doing that. That's gross. But that's going to be in the back of that kid's mind. And if they ever get in over their head, they at least know they can come to you.
That's beautiful. You love apologetics, right? I mean, yep. You wrote a book on apologetics. Does God exist?
Right.
How big a part of your life is giving people answers on a broader sense? I mean, in concert with the book that you wrote.
Well, I'm, you know, as a Catholic who's very intellectually stimulated by things, like I have my undergraduate and master's degrees in philosophy. So I love the big questions. I've always loved the big questions. But sometimes people can't ask the big questions because they feel like they're drowning constantly, or they can't receive salvation because they are immersed in pornography. So I think it's funny. 5 years ago, I would say to schools that I would speak to, because I speak to about 70,000 people a year, hey? I said, you know, can I speak about pornography? 5 years ago, oh, golly, no. Just give a basic chastity talk and maybe talk about pornography somewhere in that. Whereas the last 2 years, all people want me to speak about is pornography. We've really reached a tipping point in our culture. So I speak all over the country on this topic in schools, and it's been such a joy. Love it.
You know, I'm really glad to be interacting with you because I think what you're doing is making a difference for time and for eternity. You're impacting a lot of people, and you just have been given a great gift of communication. You're a great writer. Love talking to you.
Well, that's very kind of you, Hank. And as I say, I've admired your stuff from afar, and it's a lovely to talk to you and a joy to be with you today. So thanks for having me.
It was an absolute delight. Again, Matt Fred, he is a speaker, he's a podcaster, he's an author. The book we're talking about is The Porn Myth. He's also written Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. And he's making a difference for time and for eternity. This is one of the most important podcasts we've ever done because the subject matter is transcendently important. I started out saying that pornography is an enslaving addiction. It's a violation of marriage. It's a precursor to increasingly dangerous and degrading sexual practices. When you think about the addictive behavior of pornography, the fact that it enslaves the mind, it conditions users to view others as mere objects of self-gratification. Remember the words of our Lord when he said that we ought to guard our gaze because the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body's going to be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And then the addictive part cannot be overemphasized, because just as marijuana is a precursor to experimenting with more dangerous substances, so pornography often leads to increasingly degrading sexual behaviors. And now you're at a place, as Matt pointed out, where you can't believe that you're actually doing what you're doing. There is a solution. The ultimate solution is Christ, who transforms us and allows us to experience life right now that is more than tepid. It is life that is abundant. It is life that is life to the full.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with author and podcaster Matt Fradd in its entirety, go to equip.org or iTunes, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you The Porn Myth, exposing the reality behind the fantasy of pornography. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers.
Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.